and welcome to yet another edition of the Milwaukee Bucks Journal Sentinel podcast. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, host of the podcast. I've got Matt Velasquez on the other line. He is the Bucks beat reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Before we get chatting with Matt about the Milwaukee Bucks, want to let you know where to find us. Of course, you found us. That's a great start. Find us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or Spotify. Give us a rating, review, subscribe. That helps us big time. And let us know what you think. You can also find me on Twitter at J.R. Radcliffe. That's at J.R.R.A.D.C.L.I.F.F.E. Your Milwaukee Bucks have 30 victories. They're a game and a half behind the Raptors in the Eastern Conference. Might not be quite the lofty perch they were at a couple weeks ago, but they're still obviously well up there in the standings, well positioned to get a prominent seed in the forthcoming playoffs. Now that we're past the halfway mark, we can look at the playoffs. Most recently, back-to-back games against teams that are near the bottom of the standings in the East, Washington, Atlanta. The Washington game did not go well. The Atlanta game went fine. It was another victory for the Bucks a couple nights ago. And the difference in that game, between those two games, of course, was Giannis, who did not play against Washington. Predictably, Matt, there was going to be some pushback after the Bucks rested Giannis, and then they went on to lose the game. A little ridiculous because they've rested Giannis twice before and won by double digits. But in this case, a lesser opponent was able to get the best of the Bucks. Curious what you think about this team defensively when Giannis is not on the floor, because we saw Washington shoot the lights out and emerge with a pretty convincing victory. Is this team disadvantaged pretty dramatically when Giannis is on the bench sitting out?
I mean, it's definitely a disadvantage considering that he's a guy who's either a first team or a second team all defensive player, or he could very well be by the time the season ends. But I think that in the Washington game, I mean, you know, they gave up maybe some more open shots than they'd like. But overall, like, Washington just shot really well. I mean, like, you know, it's not every game that the Wizards are going to shoot. Was it 18 for 30? Let's look at the numbers now. Yeah, 18 for 33 on threes. And I think at one point it was 18 of 31. You know, so 54.5%. I mean, that is a pretty... Yes, that's pretty significant in terms of an outlier. I mean, most teams aren't going to shoot 50%, even if you just, like, kind of gave them dare shots all day. And you have, you know, Jeff Green, who, you know, is a decent three-point shooter. He's not, you know, he's not really, you know, a great three-point shooter, and he was 4 of 7. Trevor Ariza, he's 6 of 12. Thomas Bryant even made one. Bradley Beal was 3 of 4. You know, it's just everyone who put up a 3 was getting really... was getting really good looks. And so, you know, it's just a function of sometimes that's going to happen. I mean, they only gave up 113 points, which in and of itself isn't really a big problem. I mean, that's not a huge number, whether Giannis is in or out. And so I think the biggest thing that they took away from that game is they gave up 40 points in the first quarter. And when you give up 40 points to start the game like that, anytime you give up a 40-point quarter, you're going to be at a major disadvantage. And they spent the whole game trying to catch up and just couldn't do it.
Giannis has been dealing with some injuries, like all NBA players are, kind of just some you know, nicks that kind of come up over the course of the season. They've been managing it. And so some of the... I guess I'd be curious to know if the Washington game just made sense because we're talking about an opponent that the Bucks should have beaten anyway. Heard maybe some chirping on social media that they could have waited until the Hawks game after the Bucks dismantled the Hawks the first time they met. And of course, Giannis came back. It was not as convincing the second time around, but the Bucks did manage to win pretty easily against Atlanta, 133-114. Maybe that would have been the better game to sit him if they had a choice. I don't know if they had a choice. Maybe the Wizards game was a point where they just really had to give Giannis a breather, the injuries had sort of piled up. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I think it's more of the latter. I think he, you know, he's gotten banged up. He plays a really physical brand of basketball. He took some hard falls against the Rockets. You know, it wasn't just a rest situation. It was he was actually hurt, kind of walking a little gingerly. You know, Bud said it had happened, you know, even before the Houston game. You know, so he's dealing with stuff that's been lingering, and he's not the kind of guy who's going to sit out. Like, he looks at a game and he says, like, my team needs me. I need to be out there. you know, and so I'm going to go play and I'm going to suck it up and I'm not going to be weak. And like that warrior mentality is, you know, it's nice and all, but you also want to tell them, hey, you need to sit out. Like, you need to get yourself right. And so, you know, they came to the conclusion that he was too banged up to go. And that's something that, regardless of who the opponent is at this point in the season, health is more important. They could have been playing, you know, Toronto or the Warriors or whatever. And I think that if someone is, especially your star player, is that banged up that you need to give them time, like, I think you give them time. You know, we've seen Toronto do that all year with Kawhi Leonard and Kyle Lowry. Whenever they're hurt, like, they sit because they know that this is a long-term deal. And Mike Budenholzer has used the phrase, you know, aggressively cautious with injuries this year. He used that specifically referring to Malcolm Brogdon for a game he missed in Detroit. So you need to give him rest when you can. And yeah, I don't think Giannis. I'm trying to figure out if I can find the proof of it, but I don't think he has dunked in either of the past two games. He didn't dunk against the Rockets, and I don't think he had any dunks against the Hawks, which is kind of rare for him. I think it's pretty fair to say he's been dunking at a pretty historic clip this year. He's got 152 dunks. And I don't think he's had any dunks. I know he's feeling it. And even in that Atlanta game, he was still feeling it. I asked him, you know, because he started the game with a couple mid-range shots, and he made a three, and he wasn't really going to the basket much. And I'm like, you know, was that something you were trying to open up, or what was the deal? And he said, I couldn't get to the paint. Like, I was hurting. I couldn't get to the paint. You know, I'm like, well, you got to the paint later. And he kind of just credited that to his teammates finding him on cuts and making it easy. But he, you know, he's been, you know, pretty ginger about his movements, and he's not trying to go to the paint unnecessarily because he's trying to rest up. So the Wizards, that's a game that the Bucks could have won even without him. I mean, they have they're not in a good position record wise because of their slow start. I mean, they're 18-26. But they've also been playing really well of late. Before playing the Bucks, they beat the Thunder in Oklahoma City. They beat the Sixers. After playing the Bucks, they took the Raptors, who were at full strength. Well, minus Jonas Valanciunas, but like, you know, they had their all stars. They took them to double overtime. You know, so it's not like they're a bunch of slouches. Like, now that John Wall's gone out, Bradley Beal's been moved up into a kind of a higher role. Tomas Satoransky is playing the John Wall role in a very different way, like he did last year, where he's facilitating more. He's not shooting as much. He opens up the offense. They're bringing Otto Porter off the bench. They have Trevor Ariza finally starting to make some shots. Like, they've actually got like a pretty talented team, but they've gotten off such a slow start that it's kind of throwing everything off. They're definitely more talented than the Hawks, even, you know, the Milwaukee's opponent on Sunday. But, you know, it's one of those things where it's not necessarily a bad loss, you know, to lose on the road to the Wizards without Giannis. I think it makes a lot of sense, you know. And all that said, the Bucks were, you know, able to tie that game after a slow start, and were in it heading into the fourth quarter. So, you know, it was still a successful road trip, 2-1, with the win over the Rockets to get it going. And now they get like one game at home and then back on the road again.
Yeah, Washington won that game 113-106. A pretty close spread considering what you just mentioned, that they hit 18 three-pointers, 33 attempts, and even without Giannis, the Bucks were able, like you said, after halftime to make that a game. We'll talk a little bit. You wrote an article for jsonline.com focusing on the Bucks post-halftime sort of surges that they've been able to come, you know, maybe if they struggle in the first half, they've been able to bounce back. We'll talk about that in a second. But wanted to rewind to that Rockets game, the 116-109 victory in Houston on Wednesday, January 9th. We talked about that a lot on the last podcast, billing it fairly as a battle between two MVP candidates, James Harden and Giannis Antetokounmpo. Giannis and his teammates certainly got the best of it. They pulled away late after the Rockets made a heck of a surge. And kind of more impressive to me knowing that Giannis was banged up and really sort of struggling to you know, fight through those injuries a little bit. But this is the first time I've watched the Bucks, and I was pretty concerned. I felt like the other team had an element that the Bucks didn't have. James Harden, to me, kind of felt like a superhero out there, and I'm sure there are times other teams feel that way. And the Bucks were able to prevail. They were able to, you know, Harden even missed some shots down the stretch. But as you saw that matchup, Did you see that as a feather in Giannis's cap? Because as far as the MVP chase goes, because they did win the game and he did rack up a ton of rebounds and obviously some points. Or does this sort of just cement? I mean, I watched it and I thought, man, James Harden really is incredible. Like, he really maybe is the front runner for that MVP award. Did you come away with any observations from that game?
I think the best part was that both guys played well. I think I enjoyed that. I enjoyed the kind of the back and forth, the NBA pettiness, the, you know, with the Rockets playing Super Freak to introduce James Harden. That was fun. I loved that kind of stuff. Like, yeah, I mean, the Bucks last week used Kawhi Leonard's laugh after Kawhi committed a turnover. Like, that's great. Like, I love all of those, like, arena game ops, like, just petty wars. Like, that's all wonderful. Both guys brought it. Harden, you know, he was 13 of 30 from the floor and scored 42 points. But, like, I don't think there were any of those 30 shots where, like, a Bucks fan would be like, oh, yeah, I was cool with that. Like, you felt like, you know, if as you're watching the game, like, you feel like any of his shots can go in. And, like, that's, like, a really scary place to be in if you're an opposing team, because, you know, you can do everything you can in your power on defense outside of blocking the shot. And if it gets up there in the air, you know, it's got a decent chance of going in. At least you feel that way. You know, he was great, though. The Bucks, you know, had their interesting defensive arrangement against him. One that after the game I learned, I was talking to Malcolm Brogdon and he was like, oh yeah, that was Bledsoe. Like, that was him. Like, you know, our plan was to shade him, and he did, like, you know, just the extreme version of that, just hanging out, like, on Harden's left side, parallel to him, like, giving him the lane, with his hands high, just, like, showing his hands to the refs and everyone else. And so I asked Bled about it. He's like, oh yeah, you know, Bud will show film and he'll talk about the scheme, and he'll say, just Bled, like, you do what you do. And so he kind of created that, and everyone followed suit, which was really interesting. It, you know, you don't usually see players just allowing opponents to drive, but, you know, that forced Harden to go to the rim where there were Giannis and Lopez and, you know, Ersan, like, waiting for him. And then if he kicked out, guys knew where they had to go, and they were going to force it out of his hands. And so it obviously worked since they got a 116-109 win, and Harden didn't shoot great from the field. And they kept him off the free throw line, too, like 11 free throw attempts. Which, you know, for him is only 11. For most people, it's, wow, he got 11 free throw attempts. But just, and so getting back to the MVP thing, you know, Harden was great, had a great second quarter, led the Rockets back in the fourth, you know, but Giannis was great in his own right, too. He's getting a ton of rebounds, came through in the clutch when the Bucks needed him, with a big tip in on a Chris Middleton miss to put him up six. You know, earlier than that, you know, he was part of a 23-1 run, and helping the Bucks to really take command of that game, take control. So I think both guys, you know, on national TV, going head-to-head, really acquitted themselves well, and I think it's just going to be a really fun MVP race, you know, between those two guys. And, you know, don't forget Kawhi Leonard, Joel Embiid, you know, the guys from the Warriors, you know, LeBron, if he gets healthy. I mean, there's a bunch of guys who can challenge, and I mean, Nikola Jokic, too. I mean, he's been incredible for the Nuggets throughout this season, especially with all the injuries they've had. So it's just, there's a whole bunch of players who could put their names into that MVP conversation. And, you know, obviously Giannis and Harden are really high up there. But it's going to be fun over the last, like, 40 or so games to see how it shakes out.
Yes, we have not talked nearly enough about Jokic, although the Bucks did beat Denver twice, so it doesn't feel like that's a direct threat anyway. Giannis finishes that game against the Rockets, 27 points, 21 rebounds, 5 assists. James Harden, 42 points, 11 boards, 6 assists. It was a great tete-a-tete, if you will, and it was, like you said, nice that both played well. Eric Bledsoe, man, we got to get that guy to the All-Star game. I mean, he does. It's so interesting to hear these, like, nuanced stories about him sort of freelancing in a way. Like, Coach Budenholzer gives him some leeway that he maybe wouldn't to other guys, and he has done some non-traditional, nuanced things that have really helped the Bucks. You know, the Bucks take that next step this season. Let's get back to what I was going to ask you about before, talking about the Bucks coming out of the second half. You wrote about this again at jsonline.com. that that this team has been able to put things together in the second half. Normally, I think you look at an athletic contest and you say, well, every possession matters, everything counts. You got to go hard from whistle to whistle, buzzer to buzzer, whatever it is. I don't know if that's true in the NBA. There's a lot of time and there's a lot of great athletes, and sometimes you can get by through stretches and then turn it on when it's right. I feel like a team that's good in the second half is okay with me. How did what were some of the observations you had in putting that story together?
Yeah, it just was a function of over the last three games. They got down to the Rockets, and came out of halftime and really turned things around in the third quarter. It was like a 38-23 third quarter. They got down and played pretty poorly against the Wizards in the first half, and then you blink and it's already back to a 2-point game after being a 10-point margin at halftime. And the Bucks were able to tie the game and brought it into the fourth quarter only down three. And then in Atlanta, they were getting absolutely demolished on the boards. The Hawks had 11 first half offensive rebounds. In the first quarter, the Bucks only had three total rebounds. And the Hawks had like eight offensive rebounds. So they got off of this really kind of poor start. They were still winning at halftime, winning by nine. That's more a function of their talent just being superior. But then in the second half, they finally achieved that separation that had been eluding them all game. They got up by as many as 14 and really kind of got the ball rolling on what ended up being a 19-point victory. And so kind of springboarding off that, I kind of looked it up and I thought, this Bucks team has been pretty good in third quarters in general. I wonder what the season's been like for them. And actually, I found out that they were second in the NBA in third quarter scoring at 30 points per third quarter, which was only behind the Golden State Warriors, which were at 30.1 points in third quarters. I kind of just looked at how they've been out of the half and how what that's meant. I mean, when they've been up or tied going into the fourth quarter, they're 27-1. So being able to, especially if you can have that big third quarter and go into the fourth leading, I mean, chances are, at least the trend has been that the Bucks can finish out that game and claim a victory. In researching that, I realized that their second quarters have actually been, just a smidge better. They're outscoring teams by like 2.1 points in third quarters. In the second quarter, that's up to like 4.3, and they're shooting just slightly better in the second quarter and playing, and scoring about as much, just playing a little bit better defense, which a lot of that has to do with their bench units playing well in second quarters, just the way that they finish the first quarter with Giannis. Giannis starts the second quarter, then they'll bring him out for a little bit, they'll bring him back in to end the second quarter, and just the different rotations that they have been working out. They've also gone out to some pretty bad first quarters and, have felt that urgency to turn it around in the second. But overall, just the third quarters have been a notable thing for them this year. There have been a couple games earlier this season. I remember that Chicago game back at home where they had that terrible first half, and then just like, I think it was like a 46-15 third quarter where they were able to turn it around. They had one against, I think, Denver. It was all during that same six-game homestand over Thanksgiving, but they had a bunch of games where the third quarters, they were really able to turn things around. And so it's been interesting. And I was kind of interested to see in pulling up the stats, just what the difference was. And I kind of compared, cause the starting unit, they play the first quarter and they play a significant amount of the first quarter. And then they play a similar number of minutes in the third quarter, and they've been a little bit better in third quarters, just scoring wise, defensively too, but scoring wise for sure. And Giannis gets a lot more aggressive. Or at least noticeably more aggressive, where he's scoring 5.5 points in first quarters, but he's up to 7.4 in second quarters, or in third quarters. And so he ramps up as the game gets going, which is like the main discernible difference between in the starting lineup in terms of scoring. Everybody else is like basically at the same numbers, first and third quarter. It's just that his scoring shoots up.
That's interesting, and I wonder how much is that sort of a concerted effort on his part, and the other being, because they have a strong bench, they're able to give him breaks here and there. Other teams maybe don't have that same luxury, and Giannis is able to exploit some things more in the second half. I bet it's more the former, though. I bet it's just he's just relaxed at the start of games and trying to get everybody involved, and then finally there comes a point where it's like, okay, it's time for me. And then he goes about dissecting defenses like he does.
Yeah, I mean, I can't tell you how many times in like post game interviews, you know, we've talked about third quarters and him having a big third quarter, and he'll just say, "I'm just trying to be aggressive." Like, I wish it's almost like if I or someone asks him about a third quarter, like I already know what he's gonna say because that's what he goes to. He's always just trying to be more aggressive. He's trying to get to his spots. He's trying to kind of, you know, force the defense into tough positions, whether that's for him to score or for him to kick out. You know, and especially if they're losing, you know, he puts that out himself and he wants to be better and stronger and more aggressive and really force the issue, not in terms of, you know, necessarily forcing shots or doing unnecessary things, but he wants to kind of be the, you know, be the aggressor, be the change maker and lead the team back.
Bucks adding to their bench unit with the signing of Bonzi Colson, former Notre Dame star, for those who like college basketball. Notre Dame and Wisconsin ran into each other in the NCAA tournament a couple years ago. I don't want to talk about it, but should we be... I don't know if this should move the needle at all. You know, it's a name that I think people will recognize, but I can't imagine we're going to see a whole lot of Bonzi Colson on the floor. I don't know. What do you think his role is going to be?
Well, you know, he takes the two-way spot from Jalen Morris, who was waived on Sunday. I don't know, depending on the time that you're listening to this, we're recording on Tuesday morning. He has not been signed yet, but he will be signed at some point on Tuesday because that is the last day for teams to sign players to a two-way contract for the rest of the season. We didn't see a ton of either Bucks two-way player, either Jalen Morris or Trevon Duvall, with the Bucks. I mean, they'd be around sometimes. Morris got like 29 minutes in some of those blowouts, just being on the bench while other guys were hurt. You know, so the Bucks are deep enough where they don't have to use their two-way players very often. Bonzi Colson, I just see him as a very kind of interesting prospect. He played a lot of power forward and center at Notre Dame, and he's 6'5". He's very physical, very solidly built guy. He's starting to stretch his shooting out to the three-point range. He can score kind of in different ways inside. He's versatile as a defender. He was a first-team preseason All-American just last season before he broke his left foot during the season, missed 15 games, and he broke his left foot again in the NIT, which caused him to miss all the pre-draft stuff for the NBA, miss Summer League, all that, didn't get drafted. But, you know, that's somebody who obviously has some talent, has some upside. He's an interesting player. He's played fairly well for the Canton Charge in the G League in about 23 games this season. So, you know, the Bucks are looking to take a flyer and see what they can learn about this guy by having him, you know, with the Bucks and with the Wisconsin Herd. You know, see what type of player he can be. And, you know, that they'll have him from now until, you know, you would expect till the end of the season. And he'll have a prorated number of days that he can spend with the NBA squad. I think it'll be somewhere in the 20, you know, around 20, since we're on the halfway mark. Usually you get 45 days, so maybe he'll get 20 to 23, depending on how the proration shakes out. So we might see him a little bit at some practices or in a Bucks uniform in some games. I don't know if there'd be many opportunities for him to play. He'd have to get onto the active roster first, and then he would have to probably have a blowout to get on the court. You know, but it all depends on what they see and what the injury situation ultimately ends up being for the Bucks. You know, if there is a need for him, he would be around if injuries did crop up. But otherwise, I think this is just a situation where the Bucks are interested in finding out more about a particular player who, you know, definitely could have some upside.
The most recent round of All-Star voting came out last week. Giannis is well ahead of the pack in the Eastern Conference. Seems pretty much a lock that he's going to wind up being the captain comes out of the Eastern Conference and gets to choose who's on his team for the NBA All-Star game. But some discussion last week about maybe seeing Brook Lopez in the three-point competition. As much as we've talked about Lopez's three-point wares on this podcast and in general, I hadn't actually thought of that. I don't know how the selection process for that works. I'm guessing it's somewhat nebulous, and I'm guessing that there will be lots of people who will vie for spots in that game. I don't know if Brook Lopez will be at the front burner, but how awesome would it be if the Bucks big man got into that competition the season he's had from beyond the arc? What do you think the odds are?
I mean, I think they're decent, right? Like they've got to be okay. He ranks 11th right now in 3-point field goals made in the whole NBA. He's at 106 made, the most by anybody who's a power forward or a center, or larger than like 6'10". So he's got that going for him. The question is, will some of the other guys who are ahead of him, some of the better 3-point shooters in the league, do they want to do it? Is James Harden really going to do the 3-point competition? I have my doubts. You would think that they would invite somebody like Buddy Hield, and he'd probably do it. Klay Thompson tends to like to do it. Does Steph Curry do it? Like maybe. Like usually they have 8 people, and he could definitely be in the mix for that. I mean, he's shooting a reasonable percentage. I just think that it's a TV show, right? And so, you want the most entertaining field, which. Obviously, if you want the most entertaining field, you take like the 8 guys with the best 3-point percentages and you just put them out there. But, those guys want to do it. And are all those guys, household names or people that fans want to watch? I think there's like a pretty cool like entertainment element to it for Brook, just because he is a 7-footer. And just to see him like go out there and chuck up threes and lumber around and like get to different spots, like, that's kind of fun. Like, it's different. Like, you have something to talk about. And, like, there have been 7-footers before. Like, Channing Frye was in there in 2010. And he had, like, a 40-something percent 3-point shooting season that season. So, obviously, he was worthy. But Brook is on pace to make more. He's shooting a higher volume. And Dirk Nowitzki won the whole thing. The only 7-footer power forward, front court player to do it. But he's a shooter, right? Like, he's been a
Dirk
shooter.
Dirk Nowitzki's a different cat altogether right there.
Absolutely. It's not, but like Brook Lopez, like it'd be kind of interesting to like be able to talk about that like during the broadcast, this guy who like people probably like don't like think about all the time, right? Like if you aren't in Milwaukee, if you aren't a big basketball fan, you're like, wait a second, isn't that guy from like Stanford who like was like a back to the basket center for like years? Like he's shooting threes now? Like people like that's kind of just like fun and different and interesting. And, like, wait, they call that guy Splash Mountain. Like, what is this? Like, I think that's just kind of fun. And as an entertainment, as a TV show, as an entertainment entity, like there's definitely a strong argument to be made. I don't know if he could win. I don't know how well he'd do. I don't know if he would shoot, like, if he'd go to the back of the rack and try and shoot them from like deep and pull him off the rack backwards so he can be a little bit further from the basket since he's so good at those 30 footers. I don't know what he's going to do, but like, I spoke to him about it. And he kind of just laughed and said, it'd be wild if he got in. He doesn't know how it works, how they get picked. He's like, but if they call him, like All-Star weekend is cool. And he'd be down to be a part of it. And a couple of different guys just were like, oh man, he's one of the best shooters in the league. Of course he's got to go. Like they got to put him in that. So it was just kind of fun to talk to different players and hear their opinions. And opposing coaches, like they know he's someone they have to plan for because he's going to stand out there 30 feet out. And if your center doesn't go out to him, he's going to pull. And he's got a pretty good conversion rate. So you can't just like give those up all the time. And the trade-off is if you go guard him, that means there's better lanes for Giannis and Bledsoe and Middleton and Brogdon and all those guys. So it's a difficult situation that Lopez's 3-point proficiency has put opposing teams in, and it's really been a boon for the Bucks.
I hope people realize, certainly the regular Bucks fans do, but I hope casual Bucks fans are starting to realize how much fun this guy is. I mean, we've talked about how integral he's been to the Bucks transformation into one of the best teams in the league. He's been huge that way. But, like, he's an awesome guy. He, on TV, you kind of alluded to this, he moves, slower than the average basketball player. So there's a little bit of an everyman, as everyman is, a 7-footer who's tremendously physically gifted could possibly be. He's into, like, Star Wars. He has a cat named Poupeau, like a French cat. His twin brother has a cat with an even weirder name. I forget what it is right now, but I think it's, like, Prince Edward Island or something like that. He's just so much fun. He's such a cool, you know, quirky, fun dude, and he's been so important to the Bucks, and I hope his awesomeness is appreciated. Certainly, being in something like a three-point competition would go a long way toward reaching the national audience and giving everybody an idea like, holy smokes, Brook Lopez reinvented himself, and he's now one of the best shooters, or not one of the best shooters, but one of the more important shooters in the NBA.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that, you know, when we talked to Kenny Atkinson, who was Lopez's coach in Brooklyn, who kind of floated the idea of, hey, you need to start shooting more threes. You know, Atkinson kind of floated out. He was like, hey, like, yes, like we mentioned to him to try and shoot more threes and to, you know, open that part of his game up and, you know, kind of evolve as a player. But, you know, you really have to credit the work that he did, you know, because he actually was the one who went into the gym and did that work and spent the time and got himself to a position where he became a great shooter. You know, it's not like they said, oh, go shoot threes, and he started shooting threes, and he was great at it. Like, you know, they gave him the idea, but he spent, you know, countless hours in the gym, you know, working on it over summers, you know, during the season, and just has transformed himself. And, you know, Mike D'Antoni in Houston, you know, credited him saying, hey, you know, he did what he needed to do to not become a dinosaur. You know, and so he reinvented himself, and, you know, it's totally changed his career. It's changed, you know, the way that he's utilized and his value as an NBA player. And, you know, it's been a major positive for the Bucks. You know, one of the biggest changes they've made over the past year.
I don't want to get the name of Robin Lopez's cat wrong. It's Prince Edward Zephyr. And apparently the two cats do not get along, which is why the brothers cannot live together. That, according to the New York Post from a couple years ago.
Also, Brooke and Robin do a really good job of never saying anything nice about each other in general. like you know that they like each other. Like they spend time together, like in the off season, and you know they're brothers, but they, you know, they kind of go out of their way just to, like, you know, throw digs at each other whenever they get the opportunity, which is just, you know, very fun.
I definitely enjoyed talking to him, one of the earlier podcasts we did this season. If you hadn't heard that conversation, you should go check it out. He is a really fun dude and having a great year. Before we move on, before we get out of here, let's talk about the schedule ahead a little bit. We record this on a Tuesday, like you said. The Heat are going to be at Fiserv Forum on Tuesday night. We're getting this podcast off the ground a little later than normal, so there's a chance you'll be listening to this after that game. The Heat always give the Bucks trouble. It's really annoying. And then the Grizzlies and Magic both on the road, followed by a return home for a game against the Mavericks. Probably our next podcast will come after that. What jumps out at you of that schedule ahead, besides the fact that you're going to be with Splash Mountain on Splash Mountain in Orlando? We talked about that next week. What else jumps out at you?
You know, this is a tough back-to-back. These are two teams that the Bucks lost to the first time that they played them this season. Miami obviously was part of a back-to-back on its own the day after they played the Boston Celtics there right before Christmas. So you would expect that the Bucks will, you know, have a little extra vim and vigor for playing the Heat this time. They're not coming off a back-to-back. They have, you know, their legs maybe underneath them a little bit better. And they haven't lost the same team twice all year, so they're going to want to avoid that. It'll be interesting to see where Giannis is physically. I know he's still hurting. I think he might be on the injury report for Tuesday's game, either probable or questionable. But, you know, I would expect that if he can play, he will. In terms of, like, if he's back to at least where he was for the Hawks game. You know, the Memphis, too. Memphis has been struggling a little bit more recently. They've won two out of the last 10. It's been a little bit of a drop for them. So, you know, the Bucks, even on the back-to-back, are going to, you know, again, have a little bit of extra punch for that game, having lost to the Grizzlies at home, one of their few losses at Fiserv Forum. And then I think they'll really enjoy having a couple days in Orlando. I mean, everybody at this time of year, if you're from Wisconsin, you would love to go to Orlando for like 3 days. You know, but having the off day, they'll spend that Thursday in Orlando. They'll probably have a practice on Friday and then the game on Saturday. Just a little bit of a warm winter respite for them, a couple days off, which is much needed after the road trip where they've been playing games every other day. And so, you know, that's going to be a good opportunity for them to try and rest up and soak in some sun. And then we have a kind of another good week of rest where they have two games at home with three days off between them before they head out on their 5-game road trip.
You'll find him waiting in line in the Magic Kingdom sometime next week. But then Matt Velasquez, Milwaukee Journal Sentinel Bucks beat reporter, will be back with us again midway through next week, and we'll chat about these four games and what's ahead. Thanks for joining us once again, Matt. We will chat again soon.
All right, can't wait.